Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly this afternoon with mostly cloudy skies, the high in the upper 80s. It's 83 degrees right now in Nashville at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Every parent knows the day will come when we get constant wheedling emails and phone calls every day begging us for money just this one time. It's important. We just didn't expect we'd be getting those calls from the President of the United States. We'll beg the question about begging, plus novelist John Irving joins us, and Carl Castle reacts badly to seeing his first Twilight movie.
Fathers, lock up your daughters!
We'll ask about the real threat coming up on this week's news quiz, right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. Rodney King has died. Captain Randy Deando with the police in Rialto, California, told CNN that King was found at the bottom of a swimming pool early this morning.
Paramedics arrived on scene and immediately transported him to the Arrowhead Regional Medical Center, where he was later pronounced dead at about 6:11 this morning.
Deando told CNN that a preliminary investigation shows no sign of foul play. A videotape of Rodney King being beaten by police officers in Los Angeles after a traffic stop ignited riots in 1992 when the officers were acquitted of criminal charges. Rodney King was 47. Protesters in New York plan a rally today against the controversial police tactic known as stop and frisk. The march comes amid mounting criticism of the practice. NPR's Joel Rose reports.
Protesters plan to march down Fifth Avenue in Manhattan to protest what they see as an unjust and ineffective policing tool. Last year, the NYPD stopped, questioned, and frisked more than 685,000 people without a warrant. The vast majority were young Black and Latino men and were released without any charge. Police Commissioner Ray Kelly and Mayor Michael Bloomberg have defended the practice, saying it helps save lives. But even they have recently pledged to rein in the number of stops. A poll out last week shows that a slight majority of New York voters disapprove of the practice, with support largely split along racial lines. Joel Rose, NPR News, New York.
The polls have just closed in Greece in an election being watched around the world for its possible impact on the euro and the world's major economies. But NPR's Sylvia Pajoli reports the bleak mood in Greece was lifted by an unexpected soccer victory.
The vote is being watched anxiously by EU leaders and markets, hoping the winner will not be the leftist Syriza party that has vowed to scrap the bailout deal that has brought crippling austerity measures. Conservative party leader Antonis Samaras signed the latest EU bailout, but now wants to renegotiate the terms, which he acknowledges are too tough. The two leading parties, on the right and on the far left, were running neck and neck in the last published polls. Many Greeks feel betrayed by their EU partners, particularly Germany. But the mood has lifted after last night's surprise Greek soccer victory over Russia. Newspaper headlines hailed the victory as a sign that Greece, whose next soccer match is with Germany, has a fighting chance to remain in the Eurozone. Sylvia Pojoli, NPR News, Athens.
Greece is asking its European Union partners for help in fighting a major wildfire near Athens. The blaze broke out yesterday from sparks at a welding site. Strong winds quickly spread the flames and destroyed several small warehouses. Police say houses are not threatened right now, but some residents were asked to leave as a precaution. Other countries are sending aerial water tankers to help fight the wildfire. This is NPR News from Washington. It rained in New Mexico yesterday, which helped firefighters fighting a blaze in the Lincoln National Forest. But the rain could cause flash floods as well. Officials say the fire is now about 60% contained. Lightning started it nearly 2 weeks ago. It's burned 59 square miles since then and destroyed 242 homes and commercial structures. The European debt crisis will be a major topic for world leaders in Mexico. NPR's Jim Honk reports President Obama is traveling this evening to Las Cabas for the summit of 20 leading industrial nations.
The intensifying debt crisis in Europe is expected to dominate the agenda at the Group of 20 summit meeting. The Prime Minister of Australia and the President of South Korea co-wrote a letter saying in part, "We need a clear message from Europe that it is taking decisive steps to stabilize and strengthen its banks." The outgoing President of the World Bank, speaking at an event in Washington Thursday, said that Europe's policies have been a day late and a euro short. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told the Council on Foreign Relations on Wednesday that if you wait to move on these things and you let the market get ahead of you, then you increase the cost of the solution. Whatever comes out of the G20 event, a more critical meeting is potentially coming up when European leaders hold their next summit June 28th in Brussels. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
Negotiators from Iran and six world powers meet in Moscow tomorrow to resume talks on Iran's nuclear program. The U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany want Iran to stop enriching uranium, fearing it's on the way to develop nuclear weapons. Iran maintains it's enriching uranium for peaceful purposes. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all so much. Thank you so much. I'm just as excited as you are. We have a great show for you today. We got the great novelist John Irving coming on to play our game later. But first, NPR announced this week that they, at long last, will be hosting a cruise. This is true. You can join Michelle Norris, David Green, and other NPR News luminaries next year on a trip to Asia. And this is the amazing thing. It is free, except every day the ship stops dead in the water and won't go again until you donate money. But we are steaming on ahead. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Edith Wagner from the beautiful River West neighborhood of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, I love Milwaukee.
Great.
It's got some of the finest corner bars that I've ever seen.
And the River West neighborhood probably has the most.
It's true. And it's great. And you're like, oh, this is so fabulous. Every corner has a bar on it filled with color and people. And you're like, why do the people there need to drink so much?
Am I supposed to answer that?
Well, welcome to our show, Edith. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian performing at the Warner Theater in Washington, D.C., October 6th. Mr. Maz Jobrani is here. Next, the author of the syndicated advice column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. It's Amy Dickinson.
Hi.
And lastly, a writer whose latest is Alpha Better Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Well, Edith, how are you?
So, Edith, you're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will recreate through three voices, if you will, from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain that two times out of three. And you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home voicemail. Ready to go?
Thank you.
All right. I will take that as a yes.
That's a yes.
That's a yes. All right. Here is your first quote.
For $50, Joe Biden will watch you eat and tell you it's a big bleeping meal.
That was ABC News imagining all the extraordinary extras being offered to people who donate money to what?
The Democratic campaign.
Yeah, the president's campaign in this case. Yes, very good. This is going to be, according to experts, the most expensive presidential election ever.
So they're raising money. One day this week, the president went to 6 fundraisers in 6 hours.
Sheesh.
It is a punishing schedule, especially for a sitting president. He has other things on his mind. Late in the day on Tuesday, he got confused and ordered a drone strike on Sarah Jessica Parker's townhouse.
They should just set a limit so you can't go after a certain amount. And then, because aren't companies, there's a lot of money in there now, billions.
Yeah.
Billions.
Well, basically, because of these various court cases, including Citizens United, there's now no limit as to what companies, corporations, individuals can donate to campaigns.
Is there a limit to what you can give NPR?
No, there's no limit. Actually, not only is there, you can donate more money, it got easier to donate money. The FEC ruled this week that people can donate to candidates by texting from their phone, like you do with, say, the Red Cross. Well, one worry, though, this will introduce the new phenomena of butt donating.
You'll
be like, wow, I'm a lifelong Republican, but my butt is supporting Obama.
Mm-hmm. Or drunk. Drunk, no, donating,
yeah.
late at night.
Yeah.
I love you, man. You're the one.
Or also, you can now sext the Obama campaign.
Right.
Now, for his part, Mitt Romney said this week that he wasn't sure he'd turn down the presidential salary if he wins, even though he's a very wealthy man. And he raised the idea of pegging his pay as president to performance.
Wow.
If he does well, he gets more.
Like president on commission. So he'd be trying to sell people up on things. Like, I know you want to get the
upsell, right?
China, I know you want to deal with us, but check out the leather paneling that we got.
So that aircraft carrier, your guys are going to want to buy the undercoating, right? you want that rust-proofed.
And also, let me go talk to my manager. Let me see what we can do.
Right, I don't know.
I'll be back. I want to give you the deal, China, but let me see what...
Okay, Edith, here is your next quote.
All the people that were rooting for me to fail, at the end of the day, they have to wake up and have the same life they had before.
Ooh.
That was a basketball player talking a year ago about all those people rooting for him to lose. Well, all those same people have another chance to root against him this year. Who is it?
Oh, my. I don't know.
He's probably the most famous and most disliked basketball player today.
Oh. The guy that went from Ohio to Florida.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
You know his name?
I think I don't.
Actually, that could describe my grandfather, but that's another story. He went for different reasons. He's like, I'm taking my talents to Tampa.
I'm going.
Well, I'll give it to you. It's LeBron James is the person you're thinking of. LeBron James. This year, the NBA Finals pits LeBron James and the Miami Heat against the Oklahoma City Thunder. There are some good reasons to hate the Thunder, too. Right after buying the team, this is great, the owners from Oklahoma City invited the team executives to Oklahoma City and fed them a meal of fried testicles without telling them what it was.
Mm. For
That's
what?
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Worst part, the testicles were their own.
And so what does thunder, what does that refer to?
I think it refers to the weather patterns.
Like weather?
Generally speaking. It's the thunder versus the heat. It's an all-climate finals.
I know, it's so weird.
But let's say...
all-climate, right.
Let's say you want to break the mold and you want to root for the Heat, which nobody is doing. Mm. Well, we have someone who can help you figure out how to do that. Joining us now from his home in South Florida, Mr. Carl Hyacin. Carl, welcome back to Wait, Wait. Carl.
Good to be here.
Hey, Carl.
So you're there. You're in South Florida. Tell America why they should root for the Heat.
Well, pity is the first thing that comes to mind.
Pity?
Not for the team and not for LeBron, but for the city itself. I mean, we're desperately rooting for the Heat because we want the rest of America to forget about the naked face-eating zombie guy.
Shouldn't you spin that, however, to sort of like a point of pride for Miami and maybe change the name of the Heat to the naked zombies?
Well, it was either, what they say, it's not the heat, it's the humidity.
Right, exactly. That'd be a better name for the team, actually.
Yeah, the Miami humidity, yeah.
That's true.
Also, do you want the championship, the NBA championship, to be in an interesting place? And this is not to disparage Oklahoma City, but, you know, there's no CSI Oklahoma City. I mean, you know, it's Miami is... is a sexier town. It's a more corrupt town. These are all reasons to cheer.
I was just thinking about what CSI Oklahoma City would be. It'd be like every episode would be like, well, he died of old age.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. I do like your attitude, though. It's like, America, root for the Heat, because hasn't Miami had enough?
Haven't we been through enough? Is my motto.
Carl Hyacin's new book is Chomp. Carl, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Carl. All right, Edith, you still there?
I am, and I know who Carl Hyacin is.
There you are. He's the power forward for the Heat. Did you know that? Here's your last quote, Edith.
Calamity? Gotcha. So what are the Kardashians doing today?
That was LA Times cartoonist David Horsey. He was talking about American reaction to the news that what is ending.
Sounds serious.
Turns out the Mayans were right.
Oh, the Earth, the planet.
The world is coming to an end, yes. Ooh. Good news from the journal Nature. We don't have to worry anymore about destroying the world. Bad news, it's because we've already done it. A new paper suggests we've already done so much damage to the planet with our overpopulation and our deforestation and our reality programming and our kitten videos that it is done. It is over. But since we've already ruined it, you can relax. Cool your house by propping open the door to your freezer. Buy a Hummer. Use it to push your Prius over a polar bear. It's fine.
I mean, do we have like 200 years? How many? How
long? We got a couple hundred years before like we're all cinder.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'm good with that.
Carl, how did Edith do in our quiz?
Edith, you had two correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Edith.
Thank you.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium for tickets and more information about upcoming shows in Chicago and our show in Cleveland on June 28th. You can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Maz, some good news. This week, Congress asked the TSA to stop pat-downs and other invasive procedures with a particularly vulnerable segment of citizens. Who?
The elderly.
No. To hell with them.
Babies.
Nuh-uh.
Terrorists.
No.
A particularly vulnerable segment. Yeah. These are human beings.
Yeah, in addition to being excused from all this, they'll also be able to use the cover of People magazine as ID.
Oh, the celebrities.
Celebrities, yes. Ooh. A congressional committee told the TSA that they need to improve their image. And the first thing they should do, stop patting down Beyonce.
Ooh.
Said Representative Mike Rogers, quote, I mean, Beyonce is not going to blow a plane up. True. She might funk it out of the sky, though.
What motivation is there to be in the TSA if you can't feel up Beyonce?
That's the whole point. Coming up, it's Daddy Daughter Day in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And author John Irving joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Focus Features, presenting Moonrise Kingdom, directed by Wes Anderson and starring Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, and Bill Murray in select theaters now. And the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
On the next Fresh Air, a biography of Superman and his creators. We talk with Larry Tye about his new book, Superman. Join us.
Who can change the course of mighty rivers.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 84 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle. We're playing this week with Maz Jobrani, Amy Dickinson, and Roy Blunt, Jr. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter. This is Steve Lawson from Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Terrific, Steve. Nice to have you with us. Williamstown is a nice place. What do you
do
there?
Yeah, I'm the director of the Williamstown Film Festival.
Oh, cool. Not the theater festival, which is
No, I've worked there, too, but now I'm running the film festival.
Oh, that's great. Let me ask you a question. If you're directing a film festival, you have to see a lot of bad movies, don't you?
An unbelievable amount.
Doesn't that get a little depressing after a while?
Yes, the giveaway is when everyone on the crew has the same last name as the director.
Oh, really?
Well, it means mom catered, dad loaned the house, and you hired your siblings, although they can't act, but they were free.
I see. Well, welcome to the show, Steve. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Steve's topic?
Fathers, lock up your daughters!
This weekend we celebrate Father's Day, the annual reminder of how all of you fathers have completely screwed everything up. We're here to help, though. Each of our panelists are going to tell you about a danger you can save your daughter from. Guess that true story, you will win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
First, let's hear from Maz Jobrani.
What do you do when you're in the middle of a spelling bee and your tongue begins to cramp up? Well, one thing to do is to stop using the word like over and over and over again. Researchers have found that the overuse of the word like by teenage girls, as in like you are like totally awesome, can cause cramping of the tongue and lead to speech problems. This impediment, known as tongueitis, has been affecting more and more teens and causing some serious problems. For example, recently at the Triborough Spelling Bee in Brooklyn Heights, New York, 11-year-old Asha Subramaniam was asked to spell the word lyceum. In asking for hints, young Asha proceeded to use the word like 9 times, saying, could you like put it like in like context, like so I could like get like a better like understanding of like the like meaning? At that point, her tongue began to cramp up and she was disqualified. Reached by phone after the incident, Asha's father, Sanjeev, was quoted as saying, this is like a huge problem in the whole like family. We are totally like devastated.
Tell them not to say the word like. The next story of a daughter danger comes from Amy Dickinson.
Teeny bopper singer Justin Bieber can be blamed for all sorts of things, up to and including the overall decline of Western civilization. But researchers in Canada have now determined that the singer's hysterical fans who have something they call Bieber fever, well, Bieber fever is an actual virus, and it's spreading. Two University of Ottawa epidemiologists used mathematical models to measure the spread of Bieber fever through the worldwide population of adolescent girls. The main symptoms of Bieber fever are squealing, tweeting, falling over, and the peeing of one's pants, followed by Facebook status updates. When the researchers measured the contagion, they discovered it spread faster than the fastest virus known to man, which is measles. Naturally, there's a fear that Bieber fever will be weaponized, leading to a worldwide outbreak, though Iran has already denied harboring WMBs.
Wait a minute. Weapons of mass Bieber?
Weapons of mass Bieber.
Bieber fever is real and can be tracked by epidemiologists. Your last warning for girls comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Teenage girls think they are just expressing disdain toward their parents and grody boys. They are, in fact, playing a potentially deadly game of, quote, ocular roulette. That is the message that Dr. Diana Vernier of the American Vision Institute would like to get through to these girls. If they would just listen for a minute and stop rolling their eyes. Eye rolling, says Dr. Vernier, has become epidemic among girls 11 to 15. And now we know that eyes roll too forcefully and often can stick that way. Yes, they can. Hundreds of cases of stuck-up eyes are reported daily in the U.S. alone, she says. It was one thing when eye rolling was a natural, if deeply irritating, response to parents' very existence. That, believe me, I can understand. I was a girl once, too, you know. But now eye rolling has become a meme. Girls practice it together. They push each other to extremes. And we see the tragic consequences in ophthalmologists' offices everywhere. Dr. Bernier cites the influence of the TV show iCarly, in which tween girls roll their eyes repeatedly to canned laughter. I have a daughter of my own, says Dr. Bernier, and when I try to tell her about the risk she's running, well, oh my God, did I just roll my eyes?
All right. These, in fact, are your choices. One of these is a potential danger for your daughter or someone's daughter. Can it be from Maz Jobrani saying like too much can actually cause cramping in the tongue? From Amy Dickinson, Bieber fever is real, it is contagious, and it is coming your way. From Roy Blunt Jr., eye rolling can lead, well, to ocular roulette, eye problems. Which of these is a real danger for the young women of America?
Well, they all sound completely insane.
Yes.
I think I'm going to go with Bieber fever.
You're going to go with Bieber fever, Amy's story?
Yes.
That it is a contagious and real thing?
Yes.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to the person who discovered this danger to our young woman.
Bieber fever involves uncontrollable crying, screaming, inappropriate life choices, like getting tattoos of Justin Bieber's name or face, and a belief of Justin Bieber as this sort of incredible pop idol.
That was Robert Smith, the University of Ottawa math professor who did the hard-hitting research into the spread of Bieber fever. You got it right. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
Woof, woof, yes. So you've earned a point for Amy, just for being convincing, and you have won our game. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home voicemail, cell phone, whatever you got, he will do it.
Fantastic.
Isn't it great? Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. And now the game where somebody who's done impressive things does something else entirely. Author John Irving is the author of the classic novels The World According to Garp, Prepare for Owen Meany, and The Cider House Rules, among many others. His latest novel is called In One Person, and he joins us now. John Irving, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. I have a very poor record at multiple choice questions.
Really?
Yeah.
My understanding is that you went to a prestigious school, Phillips Exeter Academy.
I did, and I was told by the college counselor that I had the lowest SAT scores in a 12-year history of the school.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you been trying to show him off ever since?
No, I was at the time humiliated, but I had a private celebration when I heard he died.
Really?
Yeah, I only invited a few friends.
Really? Just over, hang out. We found a chart on your Wikipedia page. I don't know if you've ever looked at it.
That's true.
And on the Wikipedia page, somebody has developed a chart of all of your novels and lists of themes and check marks.
Oh, yeah, somebody said that to me, actually.
And
I didn't know where it came from.
Yeah, the themes are, and these are the ones, New England, sex workers, wrestling, Vienna, bears, deadly accidents, and absent parents are on the list. Are there any others that are missing? We kind of imagine you there with a checklist, checking them off yourself as you went through it.
Well, that's a fair list of what I would call superficial details.
Yeah.
I would say death of people you love and don't ever want to lose is probably more primary on that list.
Sure. Do you ever surprise yourself when you sit down to write a novel and the next thing you know, another bear pops up?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't surprise myself. because I begin with the ending of books and I know where I'm going, which I know makes it sound terribly manipulative.
No, it's actually...
Which it is.
It's interesting to me. We've read that you always know the last line of your novel before you start writing it?
I didn't always know it was the last line. That is, the first four or five books, I imagined that I'd actually been forward enough to have written a first line, only to discover over time that it was, again, the last line.
Ooh.
So it didn't become recognizable as a process until my sixth novel, The Cider House Rules, but at which point I just realized, well, I get endings first, and I should recognize that.
Right. You've written so many novels in about these themes that have come up again. Have you learned anything about yourself in all these years that you didn't know when you started?
If I have any advantage, maybe as a writer, it is that I don't think I'm very interesting. I mean, beginning a novel with the last sentence is a pretty plodding way to spend your life. I do know where I'm going, and it's just a matter of finding the language to get there. I don't mean to make this sound so joyless.
Let me ask you, we understand that you write the same way. You write. You don't use a computer. You write either longhand or in a manual typewriter. Is that correct?
I got rid of the manual typewriters. They were too fast.
Really? So now you're just writing longhand?
I've always preferred writing in longhand. I've always written first drafts in longhand, and it became so cumbersome just to try to keep enough moving parts to repair the typewriters, which had not been manufactured for 20 or 30 or 40 years, that I was beginning to feel I was living in a machine shop, and I was repairing the typewriters all the time instead of writing, so I got rid of them.
Right, so now you just write longhand.
It's true. There's not much that can go wrong with a pen. You just use another one.
Can I ask a question? So you, if I remember right, you've always been a wrestler. Is that right?
Well, I'm 70 now. I don't wrestle with anyone but the dog.
Oh, you don't do it anymore?
Because I know some 80-year-olds you can take, probably.
I remember reading that you continued to work out with the high school team, and but those days are done.
Well, I did that into my 60s, but then I started getting hurt in various humiliating ways. So
you're sort of living out your character's life, I should say. That happens a lot in your books.
Well, yeah, it was time to stop. When you have repeated orthopedic procedures on your little finger, it doesn't really amount to much except degradation.
I understand. Well, John Irving, we have asked you to play a game we're calling
The World According to Garp.
Your novel, The World According to Garp, is about sex, castration, bears. Garp, on the other hand, is about raisins and nuts that you eat when you're hiking. We're going to ask you three questions about Garp. Get at least two right, you win our prize. One of our listeners, Carl, who is author John Irving playing for?
John Irving is playing for Jamie Mitchell and Jessica Roy from Worcester, Massachusetts.
So we all know we're talking about Garp, right? You know, the stuff, the trail mix. Ready to play?
Sure.
Here we go. I can sense your excitement. Here we go. Despite what you might have heard, Garp is not named for the acronym Good Old Raisins and Peanuts. Its name, say linguists, most likely comes from what? A, an Old English word meaning to gobble or eat greedily. B, a 19th century product called Emmanuel Garp's nutritious legume mixture. Or C, it's onomatopoeic, its name for the noise people make when eating it. Garp, 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 garp.
You're serious, aren't you?
Serious as the tomb, sir.
I guess I'd go with A.
You're going to go with the Old English word meaning to gobble or eat greedily.
Well, it just, it's probably wrong, but that's my history with multiple choice.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to refute it. So even if I'm wrong, well, I used to feel this way when I did the SAT test, that I should have been right.
Right. I hope this is a redemptive experience for you. You're correct. You are right. It was amazing. I think it might be from the same old English root as the word gawp, you know, to like hang out with your mouth open. Yeah, so that's right. All right, next question. It is called Garp in America.
You mean there's more than one question?
Oh, yes. Don't put your pencil down yet, sir. It's called Garp in America, but in New Zealand, that trail mixture is sometimes called what? A, gravel yums, B, schmogel, or C, winna winna muckluck.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Well.
You could Google it. Oh, I'm sorry. You would just have a pad of paper.
Yeah, but I know how to do the Google thing.
You do?
I do, yeah, but right. there isn't time, and I could not spell the answer, which is C, and I choose C.
You're going to choose C, Winnowinnamuckluck?
That one.
I wish they called it Schmogel. Sometimes they call it Scroggin as well. All right, this is exciting, though. You have one right with one to go. If you get this correct, you win. Gorp isn't just a snack. It was also a 1980 film, Gorp. The film was about what? A mountain-dwelling madman who makes trail mix out of dried people. B, a mischievous camp counselor with a mad crush on a sexy waitress played by Fran Drescher.
Oh.
Or C, a 13-year-old girl who adopts an alien and calls it her galactic origin rascally person.
I'm trying to think which of these movies I would detest least.
Yes.
I think I'll go with the first one.
You know, the mountain-dwelling madman who makes trail mix out of dried people?
Yeah, better than the Fran as a waitress person.
You don't buy Fran as a waitress?
Well, you want me to guess again?
I do.
Okay. Well,
wait.
I now understand why your novels are so long. You take your time to work your way through stuff. Everything happens in its own time. I admire that.
Who played the camp counselor? In
that? I don't remember his... Well, I'm not going to say, am I?
Trying to trick him.
Yeah.
It's a trick.
Well, I guess I would be foolish to not say that it sounds like B.
You would be correct. No! It's a... Gorp was a low-budget summer camp comedy in which Miss Drescher played the unattainable sex object.
Aww. But the whole you're not so good at multiple choice thing is really coming into focus now.
It goes with writing by hand.
It really does.
You know the part where you have to fill in the part with the pencil completely?
Yes.
Well, that took hours. if you do it properly, you have to really do it. I mean,
Carl, how did John Irving do in our quiz?
John had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Jamie Mitchell and Jessica Roy.
Do you feel any better about your multiple choice?
Does anyone lose on this show?
Not if I've enjoyed their books as much as I've enjoyed yours.
Consider
it repayment, sir.
That's very kind. Thank you.
John Irving's newest novel is In One Person. It's in the bookstores now. John Irving, thank you so much for being with us. A pleasure to talk to you. In just a minute, Carl tries to control his excitement on our listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing reviews on local AC repair, landscapers, doctors, and others based on member experiences at angieslist.com. Pimsleur Language Programs, offering the potential to play the Bluff the Listener Challenge in 45 languages. Learn more at pimsleur.com. And eSurance, offering online tools and 24/7 service. Insurance for the modern world, more at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Economist Joseph Stiglitz will be our guest. He says the American Horatio Alger story is really more likely now in Europe. Also, our favorite choir director stops by with some selections that celebrate the marriage of music and text. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Weekdays at noon. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from you, the listener. You can become a member or renew your membership online anytime at WPLN.org. Coming up in about 22 minutes at 12 o'clock is The Splendid Table. Right now, the time is 11:39. It's 85 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson, and Maz Jobrani. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carol plays one-on-one with LeBron James in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Ma's parents of children at an expensive progressive private school in Manhattan are upset that the school's teaching methods seem somewhat unstructured. They had high educational hopes for the school run by whom?
High educational hopes by the school run by... is this a smart person?
No, it's run by a group famous for doing something else.
A group famous, the Rolling Stones?
That would be awesome.
They must have different techniques.
Yes, exactly.
Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
What's the call? What's the call? These people were famous for doing something else. Is this a corporation?
I'll give you a hint. The school uniform is a black turtleneck, black pants, and blue face paint.
Oh, the Blue Man Group.
The Blue Man Group.
Oh, yeah.
If you want your kid to end up weird, yes, the Blue Man Group. If you want your kid to end up weird, but not quite as weird as a homeschooled kid, how about a school run by Blue Man Group?
Mm-hmm.
Parents shell out $32,000 a year to have a bunch of bald blue men who spit marshmallows and paint onto canvases teach their kids. Now, they're shocked to find out that, sure, little Johnny can play a gigantic flute, but he can't read.
Mm-hmm. I thought they don't talk.
That's part of the problem.
So, yeah,
how was school today, Junior? Well, a guy just stood there and waved a stick around.
Maybe it's a good way to get the kid to stop talking.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, Tommy's been talking too much. Let's get him with the Blue Man Group. They'll teach him to shut up.
Oh boy.
Who would put their kid in a Blue Man Group school? Are you really that big of a fan where you're like seeing the show, you're like, what would be great? We should put Tommy. I wish I were at school. I could put Tommy in a Blue Man Group. He'd be just like that bald guy with the blue... Oh my God!
Roy, Southwest boards their planes through groups. Some airlines use seat assignments and boarding number. Well, the Latvian airline Air Baltic is taking a unique approach. From now on, they'll be seating passengers by their what?
By their bottoms.
That's where they'll do it.
Yeah, they're measuring their seats. They're measuring. Yeah. They're measuring their width. Is that what?
No.
No. Was I right to say their bottom?
You were not right to say their bottom.
Oh, okay. Well, then, by their how famous they are, I don't know.
They can.
Are there any famous Latvians?
They can check to see what color your ring is.
Oh, your mood.
Yes, your mood.
Board you by your mood.
Seat you by your mood. You can now fly on this airline first class, business class, murderous rage class.
Huh.
At Air Baltic, they're seating passengers based on shared moods. The system relies on a scientific process of asking passengers to reveal personal details about themselves, interests, hobbies, and your mood during travel. However, the seating chart suffered a few early setbacks. Too many people, when asked for their hobby, listed, quote, having an entire row to myself.
Ooh.
Which seems like, you know, trying too hard. If you want to get that, you should be more subtle. You should list your mood as prying or desperately in need of a shower. Murderous.
So they would ask you before you boarded and then
and then they put people similar moods together.
They have obviously never dealt with someone in menopause. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe there's a menopause mood section.
You'd have to keep moving around the plane as your mood shifts.
You would.
Is there a farting section?
No. Does that qualify? My mood is gassy. Yes.
That's my mood all the time.
Ma's librarians recently discovered a scientific paper on penguins dating from 1910. Ooh. The author hid the paper away. It has stayed hidden for a century. Why did he hide it away?
Because they found out that there were secrets about the penguins.
Yes, what secrets?
Sexual things going on.
Yeah. The penguins were perverts.
Yeah.
Scientist George Levick went to the South Pole 100 years ago. He expected to find the adorable, virtuous penguins like we might see today in, like, Happy Feet. But instead, they discovered a flightless avian version of Caligula. Quote, there seemed to be no crime too low for these penguins, said Levick, who described male penguins as hooligan, rapist, necrophiliac, child abusers. He was pretty upset. Good thing they never found this before they made March of the Penguins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you would have heard Morgan Freeman going, and now the Penguins, oh my God.
Look away.
Stop that. Get away from her.
They do use their wings for something. What are they doing?
They sure do walk cute. I don't care. Necrophilia and all that, but...
That's how they get you, Roy.
Actually, it turns out...
Come here, little fella.
Turns out all that insane sexual activity, that's why they walk that
that's
way.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, the report was quickly repackaged as an e-book titled 50 Shades of Black and White. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website at waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Cleveland on June 28th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Olivia Cook calling from Eagle, Idaho.
Hey, how are things in Idaho?
Oh, it's beautiful here. I love it. It's got a little bit of everything.
Excuse me, is it Eagle, Idaho? The town
yes.
is Eagle?
Right. It's about 7 miles outside of Boise.
You have a lot of eagles there?
You know, we have a lot of falcons. I haven't actually seen an eagle.
Well, maybe you would want to change it.
I will bring that up at the next city council meeting. Yeah,
do that. Olivia, welcome to the show. You're going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge. Your job, of course, Carl is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each, and you just have to finish them for us. Do that two times out of three. You will be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes, I'm so excited.
All right, here we go. Here is your first limerick.
For the world's most exciting sale yet, it's a fashion shoot I might regret. With prices so low, you'll lose bladder control. So I model in pants that are...
West?
Yes. To get the word out about their big new summer sale, London department store Harvey Nichols put out a bunch of ads with models peeing their pants. The caption read, "Try to contain your excitement." It really caught on with fashionistas. Smelling of urine is the new black.
Little edgy.
A little bit.
They didn't actually do it, though, did they?
I believe it was fake. It was Photoshop.
Sure. Maybe some of them wanted to go ahead.
The method models.
Yeah, that's right.
Here is your next limerick.
Though our bones show how big we have been, we dinos have no double chin. To be tough in a fight, we had to think light. We dinos were really quite...
thin?
Yes. So, you know, do these fossilized remains make me look fat? According to new evidence, dinosaurs weren't big lumbering beasts. They were actually quite slender. The brachiosaur was thought to weigh 80 tons, but really was a bikini-friendly 23 tons.
Wow.
That's why he was always like, "I'm not fat, I'm giant boned." Here is your last limerick.
At 105, I'm still fertile, but that old shell won't make my blood curdle. I'll get a divorce and swim a new course till death is too long for a...
turtle.
Right. Very good. Bibi and Poldi, two ancient giant turtles at the Austrian Zoo, are divorcing after 115 years of marriage.
Oh.
Both turtles are said to be thriving in their separate enclosures. Bibi's gotten really into very slow marathons, and Poldi has taken up with a hot young thing of 85.
So I read about this, and they like started to fight, and one like bit the other's shell.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They were together for like decades and decades.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're like, they had enough. They couldn't take it anymore.
Maybe they tried counseling with like a wallaby. They called the kids. They had to talk about it.
Kids were probably 85, 90.
Yeah.
There you go.
Carl, how did Olivia do in our quiz?
Olivia, you were fabulous. Three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done, Olivia. Thank you. Thanks so much for playing.
My pleasure.
Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E becomes mine of the day. Me and little J-O-D will be going away. I love you both and this
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Amy Dickinson and Mazdro Brani both have 3 points.
Ooh.
Roy Blunt Jr. has 2.
All right.
Ooh. Wow.
Ooh. So,
it's on.
So, Roy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank.
Okay.
Just weeks after the elections, the highest court in blank ruled the parliament invalid and dissolved it.
Egypt.
Right. In his appearance before the Senate Banking Committee Wednesday, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of blank, fielded mostly softball questions.
Oh, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yes. On Tuesday, Secretary of State Clinton charged that Russia is supplying attack helicopters to blank.
Syria.
Right. Ron Barber, an aide who was wounded in the shooting of blank, won a special election to succeed her.
Gabby Giffords.
Right. A day after announcing they'd be firing copy editors, Canada's National Post newspaper published a blank.
Published a typo.
No, published a completed crossword puzzle.
Ah!
For helping him elude police, on Tuesday, the girlfriend of mob boss blank was sentenced to 8 years in prison.
Whitey Bulger.
Yes. Attendees of an Atlanta Braves reunion party figured out a man claiming to be a former player was an imposter when he blanked.
He put his glove on the wrong hand.
When he couldn't hit a baseball. Atlanta invited former...
I bet he also put his glove on the wrong
he
hand.
He might have. We don't know. Atlanta invited former Brave John Sullivan, but the guy who showed up claiming to be John Sullivan didn't look anything like him, had a paunch, couldn't remember exactly when he had played, and couldn't hit a baseball.
Hmm.
Especially suspicious, when asked his position, he said he'd played fifth base.
Oh.
Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Roy has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. Well done. We have flipped a coin. Maz is elected to go second. Fill in the blank. Saying that Republicans were trying to score political points on Tuesday, Attorney General Blank rejected a GOP call to resign.
Eric Holder.
Right. As more evacuations were ordered, firefighters from neighboring states joined forces to help fight wildfires in Blank.
Colorado.
Right. After decades of controversy, a coroner in Australia ruled this week that a Blank really had killed Lindy Chamberlain's baby.
Dingo?
Yes. On Monday night, the Los Angeles Kings beat the New Jersey Devils to win this year's Blank.
Stanley Cup?
Yes, and a Utah couple whose home had been broken into recovered all of their stolen items at blank.
At a sale?
At their next-door neighbor's garage sale.
Ha.
At its worldwide developers conference on Monday, blank unveiled a new, very expensive laptop.
Apple.
Yes. In an attempt to lure bacon lovers to their stores, this week Burger King announced their new blank.
Bacon salad?
No. Bacon sundae.
Sundae.
A man in Israel filed for divorce after his wife blanked.
His wife turned out to be a turtle.
His wife brought home 550 cats.
Ooh, 550?
Yes.
It was that 550th one that
That's
really
true.
Put it over.
He was perfectly all right with 549. He was like, I'm fine with this. One more, I'm out of here. And she did it.
How big was her car?
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Was it a circus car?
It was. It was one of those cars.
Just kept going.
Carl, how did Maz do in our quiz?
Maz had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Maz has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, then, Amy, this is for the game. You ready?
Okay.
Fill in the blank. On Thursday, federal prosecutors announced that they would not be retrying former presidential candidate blank.
John Edwards.
Right. As Moody's downgraded the country's credit rating, blank could be the next European country to seek a bank bailout.
Oh, Spain?
Right. After suffering a seizure last weekend that led to 2 car accidents, Obama's blank secretary took medical leave.
Commerce?
Right. In an interview with ABC, Senator Lindsey Graham said that he no longer agrees with the Republican pledge to never increase blank. Right. A survey of young people in the UK found that 11% of respondents thought eggs came from blank.
Oh, eggs came from egg cartons.
No, that eggs came from wheat or corn.
Oh,
Anne Rutherford,
it.
Best known for her role as Scarlett O'Hara's youngest sister in the movie Blank, died at age 94.
Gone with the wind.
Right. In a move that could cost him his 7 Tour de France titles, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency filed charges against cyclist blank.
Lance Armstrong.
Yes. Americans worried about being killed by terrorists can rest easier because, according to a new analysis, they are just as likely to be killed by blank.
Drone.
No, their own furniture.
Ooh.
Your ottoman, sitting there quietly, not moving, might be plotting your death. An analysis by The Atlantic shows Americans are just as likely to be crushed by televisions or furniture as they are to be killed by terrorists. Mm. In response, the Pentagon immediately invaded IKEA. Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
She needed six correct answers to win, and Amy had six correct answers. So, with 15 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion. You did it. You did it. Fist bump.
Yeah.
In just a minute, now that we have uncovered the sexual secrets of penguins, we're going to ask our panelists the next animal we'll learn has a secret life. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. And Angie's List, providing reviews on local AC repair, landscapers, doctors, and others based on member experiences at angieslist.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Mackenzie Van Engelenhoven. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Stolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced every week by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what animal has a secret life? Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Monkeys. They are appalled by their portrayal in the popular culture because they have no sense of humor. They also think that when you bang two little cymbals together, it sounds really pretty.
Amy Dickinson.
Blind and naked mole rats aren't actually naked. These shy nocturnal creatures are really wearing teeny tiny spandex bodysuits. And they're not blind either because they have to see in order to zip up their teeny tiny zippers.
And Maz Jobrani.
Iguanas aren't the cuddly pets from Central and South America that we've come to know them as, but are actually here to take jobs away from the American lizard.
Well, if any of that comes true, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Maz Jobrani, Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
An estimated 80% of Americans suffer from back pain at some point. This complex system requires a personal approach. Back surgery may not be right for everyone, but it can enhance quality of life for many suffering people. The team at the Vanderbilt Spine Center personalizes care for each patient based on their needs, along with proven research and years of experience. Available options include surgical and non-surgical approaches. More information is available at VanderbiltSpine.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Scherr. As part of its 50th anniversary celebration, Nashville Public Radio is bringing Says You back to TPAC, the Polk Theater, in Nashville, September 8th and 9th. Tickets, information, and details are now available at nashvillepublicradio.org. So remember, that's Saturday, September 8th, and Sunday, September 9th. Be sure to get your whole self down to TPAC for the Nashville editions of Says You.
In the coming week on Talk of the Nation, what happens in Egypt now after what some are calling a military coup? Voters in Greece take sides on the euro. Nuclear talks with Iran seem to falter before they begin. And do we need to establish international ground rules for cyber warfare? I'm Neil Conan, that and political junkie Ken Rudin, in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.